Rumi said that silence is the language of God. All else is poor translation. In my experience, silence is the heart of our practice. We, with all our thinking and self-storytelling and putting ourselves in the center of life, the center of our practice, we create a cage trapped in all these ideas and thoughts. And the way out of the cage is to let yourself become silent. And when the mind is still, then there's no cage. There's everything, the universe. So that's why he says that silence is the language of God. Now, the first cage might be God. Silence is the language of God. We don't talk about God in our practice. And then it unfolds from there. I'm not saying that anybody here did that, but that can happen because we create a territory, Zen territory, in which God is rarely, if ever, mentioned. So if the word God is used, immediately we start telling ourselves a story, trying to figure out what does that mean and why is Sensei saying this. And that creates the cage that we live in. And we do this in all sorts of different areas. So I just wanted to say a few words about silence, because I think I'm going to speak about a koan today, but this applies to all realms. But one of the ways that is important to take up a koan, to get a koan, and being able to respond to a koan, or if appropriate, not respond to a koan, is to take it up as silently as possible. And as we prepare ourselves for this, is to allow our practice, our sitting, to be as silent as possible. And part of that silence is when we're sitting, there's nobody observing our sitting. There's nobody making judgments about, oh, this is a good sit today. There's nobody that leaves sitting and starts thinking about what happened yesterday or what am I going to do today. The more we sit, the more we relax into sitting, the mind becomes silent. So the walls of the cage are softer, and we create a bigger space. And as this space gets bigger, we're able to receive the koan more and more. Now, this is a familiar koan, but I like it. It's case 46 of the Mumen Khan, and the koan reads this way. Master Se Kiso said, when you get to the top of a 100-foot pole, keep climbing. When you get to the top of a 100-foot pole, keep climbing. Now, for some people, the first response to this is to try and figure out what the hell is Sakiso talking about. What does that mean? How can I figure this out? And so forth. And again, smalling the area in which we take up the koan. Now, I've told this story before, but I enjoy telling it because it's funny to me. But when I was working with a koan, with Roshi, I don't remember which one anymore, but I presented my response to the koan. And you have to know him in a sort of an intimate way. But he sometimes got this very confused look on his face, which communicated is, he doesn't know. He's wondering, what the hell are you thinking, right? And so this one time, and you know, we sit very close in Daisan. And so I gave my response to this particular koan, and I saw this quizzical look on his face, and I thought, oh, shit. And he bends over, almost nose to nose, and he says, in a whisper, Carl, it's a metaphor. This is the climbing of the 100-foot pole is a metaphor, if you hadn't already known that. So if we look at it as a metaphor, and a metaphor for our practice, getting to the top of the pole could be a way of expressing the top of the pole being insight. We become enlightened. So if you get to the top of a 100-foot pole, it's impossible to, of course, keep climbing. So how do we understand this? And what he means is that there is no end to our practice, that there's no beginning, there's no end. There's nobody who starts out unenlightened and then gets enlightenment. That's a trap, right? We're creating a dualistic way of experiencing this. We start out and there's an end. So what he's saying is, keep climbing is practice never has an end. It's always unfolding, no matter how deeply you experience life. There's still room to go deeper. So, and it's a trap to think that it's all over when you have your first enlightenment experience. So we don't want to dwell in accomplishment and walk with our chest puffed out. Be attached to the realization of our true self. So the challenge becomes how enlightenment will be in the next moment, and then the next moment, and then the next moment. And what other experiences or insights do we have that deepens our practice? And how will we manifest the deepness of this practice or the insights that we have? How will we do that in our everyday life? Now, a familiar saying is, Dogen said, to study ourselves, we must forget ourselves. And that's silence. Forgetting ourselves is silence. That's when the story stops. Even having insight, there can be the story that keeps going on, right? The story that we congratulate ourselves, or we start thinking about the meaning of this insight. And again, we start creating the cage again. Even though we've had insight, we can still do that. So to study ourselves, we must forget ourselves. And we must continue to forget ourselves moment to moment to moment, to be real and to be authentic. So I don't know, but I'm not asking for the answer right now, but sort of a rhetorical question. How many people here thought that the practice takes you to enlightenment and once you're awakened, it's all done? But it's never finished. And then there's the question, who is it that would be finishing the work? As soon as someone holds to the idea, there is a cloudless sky. As soon as that happens, rain clouds appear. There's this beautiful, wide open life. And then we start capturing it. We start finding meaning. And the rain clouds come. And I don't know how many of you are familiar with calligraphy, but there's a thing called an enso. And it's a calligraphic expression of the truth of what I'm talking about. And it's done with a brush, and it says circle. But the circle is never complete. There's always a space. So there's always a space. It's never complete. It's always open. We're always open to life. So even if we are enlightened, the circle never closes. Now, I think I've talked about this, but when we get to the 100-foot pole, another way that, I mean, this is actually another translation, is when we get to the top, we step off. Now, probably some of us, the idea of stepping off the pole immediately creates another container. Like, oh my God, you step off, what are you, crazy? You step off a pole, you fall down 100 feet, you know. And so it unfolds, which is the typical way of trying to understand something. But it means that insight isn't enough, that we must step down into the marketplace, into everyday life, and learn to live our lives from an enlightened perspective. And when we do this, we let our mistakes and our limitations teach us where we must still wake up. So stepping off the pole into the marketplace, into daily life, is actually a gift, because it helps us to keep unfolding, to not get stuck at the top of the pole. And then the other part of this, this gift of insight, one of the responsibilities in our practice is that we must use this unfolding insight in service of others. And this is a familiar example, but this morning I was driving here, and it was a very calm, peaceful ride. The sun was coming up, and it was, I don't know, just one of those mornings where the essence of it, the feeling of it was just really great to be alive. And I felt gratitude for this life. And as I was driving along, the guy in the slow lane to get around the slow car pulls right in front of me, almost literally about 5 feet away. And so from this blissed out, wonderful state, bam, you son of a bitch, what are you, and so it's constantly unfolding. Whatever level we're at or whatever place we are, there's always something else to know, to learn. So that's the marketplace and the teaching of the marketplace. So the koan is telling us that we must live life fully and authentically, moment to moment. One of the ways, this just occurred to me, one of the ways that we can get trapped is there might be the thing, it might come up to me that, well, I'm not going to tell this story. What kind of a Zen teacher am I if I'm calling somebody a son of a bitch? Right? But if I'm authentic, if I can learn to live my life authentically, of course I can tell that story. That's part of being a human being. That's part of being life, being alive. It's being open and fresh. Open means not stuck in that container, in that cage. Fresh means not stuck in that container. When this happens in our lives, then we are truly being alive, truly being awakened. But it's a day-to-day, moment-to-moment process. Even if you, quote-unquote, have gotten to the top of the pole, this awakening is never over. And it's a real attachment, a real awful place to get stuck, of this holding on to a fixed idea about how things work. So I'm going to end with this. This is a few lines from Joseph Campbell. People say that what we're all seeking is a meaning to life. I think what we're really seeking is an experience of being alive, so that our life experiences on a purely physical plane will have resonance with our innermost being and reality, so that we can actually feel the rapture of being alive and doing this moment by moment. So the next time you see a flagpole, I challenge you to see how high you can get. Thank you.